Good morning and welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. I'm Amy Otto, joined by Lee Cantor. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning, Miss Amy. How are you feeling today?
Hot.
Hot.
It is hot out.
Every day. Isn't it weird to, like, at night, you look and your car still says 90-some degrees?
I know. Last night, mine said 85 at, like, 9:30 at night. That's hot.
Yeah.
But, you know, pretty soon we'll be enjoying fall, so
that's spring and fall. That keeps us sane here.
That's right. We have an event coming up tomorrow night. We should probably talk about that.
I forgot all about it.
Oh, you did not. So we started with the Atlanta Business Radio Show, inviting all of our guests back for a networking event once a quarter. And do you remember when we started, Lee? We started at Goldfish, right, and there might have been 12 people.
Right.
And now there are, it's shoulder to shoulder. So
right. You
don't have to have been a guest on the Atlanta Business Radio Show to come, and you can give the details on that, Lee.
It's friends and family, and it's at the Concourse Athletic Club, and it's 5:30 to 7:30-ish. And the last time I checked, it was close to 200 people
have
RSVP'd.
And it's great. If you've been a guest, definitely come. Yeah, it's a lot of fun and a lot of great way to meet lots of folks in a short period of time. And I'm looking forward to being there. I'll see you then. I'm also looking forward to our show today. We have kind of a mixed bag today. There's something for everyone. We've got Bob McNally here from GeoVax talking about some vaccines, which that's big business and definitely something we all need to be educated on. We've got Jim Ross from the Ultimate HD Productions, and boy, I'm looking forward to that. If you need video for your business, you want to listen up. Got a great writer on the show this morning. We've got writer for hire, Angela Dearden, and we're following up that with Jake, who's here to talk to us about a special event that would benefit all businesses. So to all of our guests, welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. But first up, Bob McNally. Welcome.
Yeah, good morning, Amy and Lee. Pleasure to be here.
So oftentimes we get information from businesses that seem a little out of the ordinary for the Atlanta Business Radio Show, but we like to educate our listeners on many things. So welcome and tell us a little bit about GeoVax.
Well, GeoVax is one of your classic biotech companies that's been spawned out of Emory University. The company started in 2001, and it's been very quietly going about its business of doing clinical trials for an HIV/AIDS vaccine, which could be used to both prevent the spread of the disease, like a flu vaccine or smallpox or polio, and also for treatment for people who are already HIV positive. So we're going through the clinical trials process with the Food and Drug Administration right now.
Interesting. And I understand AIDS is 30 years old now. I'm always interested in knowing, how does the CDC identify something like AIDS?
Well, back in 1981, they'd never seen AIDS before, and so they didn't know what HIV was, which was the precursor virus, which eventually leads to the breakdown of the immune system, which leads to AIDS. But back in 1981, they had a series of individuals from the gay community that had a particular form of pneumonia that eventually worked its way into Sarkozy's sarcoma. And those were telltale signs of a new and devastating disease. And it wasn't until 1984 that Frank Gallo, the University of Maryland, eventually gave it a name and called HTLV-1, which eventually became HIV.
Wow. So when you talked about the vaccine, obviously a lot of research has been done in this area in the last 30 years. Is this something that would benefit those that are currently undergoing treatment for AIDS, or is it just preventative for those that do not have it?
Well, the vaccine is really the holy grail. You know, here we are 30 years later. People in the U.S. think that HIV is a disease that's gone somewhere else. Belongs in Africa someplace. It's not here. But the truth be known, the CDC's put out some data that shows that in the U.S., the incidence of HIV has not changed in 20 years. It's still 60,000 new cases each year. It costs our U.S. government $8 billion to fund treatment and treatment centers for people that are HIV positive. And so the world of vaccines is really for two things. One is you'd like to have it like a flu vaccine. Mm-hmm. You inoculate large portions of the population to prevent the spread. And the other one would be what's coming out now in the world of vaccines. What's really new is for cancer and for some of these dreaded diseases like HIV, there's actually vaccines that can do the work. Used to think that you had to use surgery, go under the knife, or take some other kind of chemotherapies to treat those things, but we're actually starting to harness the immune system to do that work.
Now, is the HIV virus like the flu virus that it changes every year? So, like, really, when you're getting a flu vaccine, aren't you getting a vaccine for last year's flu? You're not getting any kind of the evolution of the flu.
Lee, you're actually on the right track, although it doesn't come on an annual cycle. It's usually geographically located, uh-huh. And so the form of the virus that we have in North America and Western Europe
is different than the one
in Africa or India, for instance.
So then your vaccine has to kind of be different also, right?
Exactly, yeah.
So is that one of the challenges?
Well, the bigger challenge, you know, that's why it's taken 30 years to do this, is first of all, you got to figure out what part of the immune system do I want to stimulate in order to be able to attack this virus. And the other challenge was, well, what part of the virus can I it doesn't matter how it replicates or changes, that there's a piece of it that's always the same that I can attack it. And that took a long, long time.
Is 30 years, is that a fast amount of time to kind of take a whack at one of these things?
It's a long time because we still don't have an approved product. But, but companies like GeoVax are getting a lot closer.
But yeah. Didn't it take forever to get like even a chickenpox vaccine?
Well, exactly. But sometimes people get lucky along the way.
So the more people kind of doing it, then the higher the probability of luck comes into play, that somebody's going to
and knowledge base. And the NIH is really a pivotal role here because they actually fund all the early research. And you've got a lot of good people in universities that are working on it.
No doubt. So how does the GeoVax vaccine work? And you said it's been developed. Has it just not been FDA approved yet?
It's just not FDA approved. Okay. We're actually in phase two. So let me try to get it into terminology that everybody can understand. The way it works for prevention is that in your immune system, what you do is you have two things that you can stimulate. One's called antibodies, which are the blocking mechanism, and the other one's called T cells, which are your white cells that actually will destroy anything that's infected. And so the way I always like to explain it is like having a World War II harbor mine, which is those round globes with the spikes coming out of it. That's what the virus actually looks like. And what you do with the antibodies is you cap off those spikes that would be in that mine so they can't detonate or can't infect
cells. But
you
have to get all of the spikes, though, right? Just if you leave a couple, that's not good.
Well, you know, as many as you can get, and can you keep – that's called antibody. And can the antibody actually hold on and do a nice job? Right. So that's one way we attack it. And the other one is with these T cells is you give it some memory to know what it – so that it can hone in on an infected cell. It's a white cell. Mm-hmm. So anytime anybody's ever had an infection on your skin, you'll see – you know, this white, pussy blood residue, and that's the same idea that's going through your system is you actually have T cells that are attacking cells that are infected. And so that's how the vaccine actually works. So through the efforts of Harriet Robinson, who was working at the Emory University Vaccine Center, she spent a lot of years in the mid-90s working towards this vaccine. She's with us still today as we move through these clinical trials. So she gets the credit for putting this vaccine together.
Would the vaccine prove to be therapeutic at all for someone that actively has AIDS?
Well, that's our hope. We actually have a trial that's going on in downtown Atlanta, University of Alabama, Birmingham, and also Los Angeles, where we're using the vaccine in a phase one trial, which means it's a small trial. This is going to be for people who are already HIV positive. We're going to stabilize them on oral meds and then vaccinate them and then have a short period of time where they come off of their oral medications, and we'll see how the viral load is regulated using the vaccine. So the goal here, our original goal, was we would love to be able to vaccinate individuals that are HIV positive so they wouldn't have to take all those expensive oral meds with all the side effects that come along with it.
Talk a little bit about that now, too. The treatment for AIDS is some type of drug cocktail is what you always hear about. But, I mean, talk about that process and what it does to the body and how the vaccine would help.
That's a really good question because, actually, Emory, again, gets credit for coming up with some of those drug cocktails. A number of years ago, they sold off a whole portfolio of new drugs that are actually almost 80% of the individuals that are HIV positive are actually taking some of those drugs.
Wow.
And they've progressed to the point now where you could actually take them on a daily basis to help prevent the spread. And then if you're infected with HIV, you can take those drugs and it will keep your virus levels down almost to normal. Now, that's the good thing. The bad part about it is okay, who's going to pay for all this? It's rather expensive. It's about $1,500 a month.
Wow.
For an individual.
Wow.
So either their insurance company is paying for this or it's coming out of their own pocket.
Wow.
Or the U.S. government, you know, taxpayers are paying
right.
for it. And then there's a lot of side effects. You know, not everybody tolerates a handful of pills taken every day.
Sure.
And so a lot of times people just don't stay on their regimen on a regular basis, and so their viral load continues to oscillate.
Is that why that the rate of people getting it are staying the same, because it's hard to stay compliant on those on the system?
I think, Lee, you're on the right track. You know, if we could keep everybody doing it, but it comes down to, you know, some people just can't afford it, or they
right.
just
mm-hmm.
don't feel like they want to take those drugs anymore.
Right.
So really the panacea that we're all rooting for here is there going to be a vaccine? And I want to share with you some good news. It was not our company. It was U.S. military and the Thai government that put together a trial about 18 months ago that was unblinded. And they proved that they could prevent 30% of the spread of the infection using a vaccine in Thailand. So that was the first time that a vaccine's ever worked in this area. And then GeoVax, I'm glad to say, we've got animal data at Emory that proves that we can get 70% protection
wow.
using our vaccine, and we just can't wait till we can get into that level of the human trial, get away from our safety trials and get into
right.
that.
How long does that trial process take?
We've been doing it for 7 years now. We've got a few more years to go.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is there a way to expedite that, or is that just you have to let it kind of play out its course like that?
Well, you know, when you're a biotech company like us,
you want to expedite it, I'm sure.
you certainly want to expedite it, but the NIH is paying the bills. That's one of the nice things about our tax dollars and our government. They see that this is such a devastating disease.
So they fund
that
it.
They're willing to fund those clinical trials, and so
right.
the government does that. And so a company like GeoVax, what will eventually happen to us is we will partner with some large pharma, and they'll speed up this process when
sure.
it gets to the stage where you need thousands of individuals
right.
in a clinical trial.
And then right now,
we'll have somebody
many,
bigger helping us.
How many people are in the clinical trials now?
We just finished one that has 300 individuals in it. We're going to start one for prevention that will have 4,000 people in it.
And then what level does it have to be at for when it's almost ready to go out to the public?
I think when you're looking at the term's called efficacy, how well does it work in the general population at large? 50%, if 50% of the people are reactive to the vaccine, that would be a good level for something like this.
And
then in a few generations, you actually could drop the level of HIV infections in half.
That's amazing. You mentioned other countries. Is this something that would have to be adapted or altered to work in other countries?
Yeah, what we do right now is we license in from the NIH a version of the virus, which is pandemic in principally sub-Saharan Africa. And we put that genetic material in our vaccine. So we actually would make a separate vaccine for that part of the world.
Wow, very interesting. Yeah. Any other vaccines that GeoVax is working on, or
no,
is this a primary focus?
One at a time.
This is a difficult project in its own right. No, we're totally focused in HIV.
But is this okay. something that, like, you know, I'm sure eventually this, I hope that it all works out for you and this thing works and everybody benefits from it. Are there key learnings that can, do you foresee that there's key learnings from this that'll translate and transfer to other vaccines?
Yeah, we certainly hope so. You know, we haven't had the luxury of time to sit and,
right.
and dream about what would be the other things that we'd
but
like to do.
But there's other ailments that might have similarities that some of the intellectual property you're developing can kind of transfer.
That would be our hope long term. So we'd license this particular product
right.
out, and then we'd go on to develop things for other
wow.
diseases.
It seems like biomedical engineering is a hot topic And there are some schools that specialize in it. I mean, what have you seen change in your field? I mean, you've been doing this a long time.
What have been the big changes?
Well, I've been around long enough so that bioengineering was really in its infancy when I was starting to do it. But, it, you know, things have gotten so complex in medicine and predictive medicine. Georgia Tech has a big program in it where no long, you know, in the future, when individuals go in for health care, they'll be able to do some tests and they'll say, okay, you need exactly this drug for this amount of time. And they'll be able to do those kinds of predictions. And so it involves statistics and knowledge of how the physiology of the human body works. And that's where the bioengineers are going to come in.
How exciting.
Yeah. Is Atlanta kind of a hub for this? Because we have a lot of, you know, we have the CDC, we have Tech here, we have, you know, Emory. Are we a hub in the country that's kind of leading?
We're in the top 10. You know, we'd like to, I'd say our nearest rival is Research Triangle Park up there in North Carolina. But I think Atlanta has a lot of things going for it. Certainly the variety of universities that we've got here. We've got a conducive business environment. We've certainly got airport and all the living things that make this a hub for attracting people and starting businesses.
Excellent. Where do you see GeoVax, say, 5 years from now? Hopefully by that time the vaccine is out.
The vaccine should be licensed or partnered with somebody else, and we'll go on and work on the vaccine for other parts of the world and then take Lee's suggestion and be looking at other diseases to go out there and find.
They want to hire me as a consultant. Do you hear that?
Exactly.
That's what I heard.
But it is amazing. I mean, even we talked about the chicken pox and now shingles. I mean, there are so many things that have, you know, been talked about for so long. And then you finally see the vaccine come out, HPV being one of those. And
they have one for hepatitis now, too, for adolescents. And so this is a totally different set of vaccines that adolescents get inoculated with than in my generation.
Right.
At what age would someone receive this vaccine, do you think, approved by, at what age?
We think eventually, it's usually in the adolescent range is where these vaccines are administered. So, I mean, you'd start off with healthcare workers and perhaps people in the gay community who might be at risk, and then eventually you go to the population at large, depending upon how the safety continues.
Is it
to
hard
be good.
To get people to do the human trials? Or is it like people are kind of knocking down your door?
Well, actually, Emory here in town has a really good system set up for themselves, the Hope Clinic over there. Dr. Mark Mulligan runs that program. They've been very good at recruiting people to come into those trials. For our therapeutic trial, where we're looking for people who are recently HIV positive, there's a number of criteria that people have to meet.
Right.
So that's made it a bit difficult to do some recruitment. ARCA is the group here in town. So if there's anybody listening out there that knows somebody who may be recently HIV positive, to contact the ARCA people.
Excellent. Give us your website and your contact information for those that do want to contact you.
And we're www.geovax.com. That's our website, and you can leave us a message, and we'll be glad to get back in contact with you.
And how exciting that they're local. There's so much going on in Atlanta. I mean, you're right down the road, making big progress and making changes in the world. Thanks so much for being our guest today, Bob.
Amy and Lee, it's been a pleasure.
Great
Thank
job.
You.
Thanks.
Great information. Gosh, you wonder where is it going? I mean, biomedical engineering, did you know about that when you were picking a career?
No, that wasn't one of my choices.
No. And now you just hear so much about it, and it is. I find it fascinating and very exciting. Our next guest this morning makes just about anything exciting. He could probably even make a vaccine look exciting and look good through video.
Nice segue.
Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show, Jim Ross. Welcome.
Well, thank you. Glad to be here.
So the Ultimate HD Productions, you know, Lee and I always say we're not much for video. We're all about radio. But so many times people come in here and they videotape the radio. I mean, people like to see.
Well, it's a video age. I mean, the internet is pretty much becoming video driven. If you're online, people are going to more and more wanting to watch. It's the YouTube generation.
It's definitely the YouTube generation. So do you think any kind of company needs to have video?
Well, if you're online, I would think you would need video because statistics are showing that more and more people on the internet want to watch. They don't want to read. Google has put a lot of research into the trends of the internet, and they're showing that, you know, 80% of people online say that they would rather watch a video about a product or service or company than to read a static page.
Is Google research?
This is Google research.
So you don't think it has anything to do with them owning YouTube, right?
Or oh,
that's probably
no,
just a coincidence.
No.
But, it is interesting. I think that some of it is just generational, too. I mean, so many kids love to watch. They don't read like they used to. They're used to watching a video on how to, and whether it's YouTube or whatnot.
And the on-demand element of that is, I think, a big shift in the way that people consume media in general.
Yeah.
Well, we are a media generation. I mean, it's not just young people. I mean, if you're in your 40s, like me, you grew up watching television prime time. I mean, we're fixed on the moving image. We are the generations of film and television. I mean, people like to watch. That's how they get their information. They want to be what I call edutained. They want to be educated, but they have to be entertained at the same time.
Are there any basic rules or guidelines to producing online video? Because I know sometimes they're just too big and maybe my computer's old. I mean, what are the guidelines for that?
Well, the restrictions used to be all about bandwidth, but now pretty much the majority of people, at least in the United States, have broadband. But now it's more of a time constraint. I mean, rules are meant to be broken. It's a brand new frontier. But usually a 3 to 5 minute length on video. But here's the conundrum of that is, you know, people won't watch a 15 minute long video online, but they'll watch five minute videos back to back to back to back. Mm-hmm. So, you know, one of the things that we're finding is you chapter things out. You want to talk about something in depth on your website. Don't make a 15 minute, 20 minute long video. Make a 3 minute video about this part of your business. Make a 3 minute video about this part of your business. And then people will just go to where the information they want to get.
That's so true. We do have a short attention span. We listen in small snippets. But you can find just about anything on the internet when it relates to video. And I would think that businesses would definitely want to capture that and have that as a part of their website. What are some of the more interesting things you've done lately? You've been all over producing video, but what are some of the more interesting projects you've been on?
Oh, well, fortunately, I don't have a typical client. So I have been filming racing at Road Atlanta. I've been on glaciers in Iceland and filming safaris in Africa. So I like to tell people that I have the greatest job on the planet, and I really believe that. But the idea is, people want to put what they do and make it exciting. And if you're not entertaining somebody and getting them engaged emotionally about your product or service, I mean, Zig Ziglar is, you know, sales 101. People don't buy for logical reasons. They buy for emotional reasons. I mean, a friend of mine has a Ferrari, and he'll give me all the logical reasons why he bought it. But we all know he did not buy it for logical reasons. He bought it for an emotional reason. And it's the same thing whether you're selling widgets or sham wows, or, you know, you want to get people engaged in your product. And the moving image does that better than any other media there is. I mean, you think about pictures are 1,000 words. Well, what's 24 frames per second do for you?
Yeah, for sure. So say I have a company and I want to produce a video. How would I get started? Is there like a minimum, or say I want to start out small and grow? I mean, how would you work with me?
Well, the first thing I would recommend to somebody is to avoid the same mistakes they did with websites back in the 90s and early part of this, is that, you know, let's do it ourselves, or let's hire an amateur or get some students in here to do it. Because, I mean, we all did that with websites, and what happened is we turned around after spending our money and we hired a pro. Because if you hire an amateur, you try to do it yourself. I mean, I'm not going to try to fix my car. I'm not going to give myself surgery, so why would a doctor or a mechanic want to do their own video? So first thing I say is find yourself a pro that knows what they're doing. And then you want to determine what your message is. You want to figure out what you want to say. I mean, it's all about return on investment. This video that you're going to make for your company needs to have a return on investment. You want it to make you money, or you want it to bring you clients. You want it to bring you referrals. So what's the message, and what do you want this video to do?
Is that something you handle as well? I mean, you coach someone through that process?
Yeah, well, you know, we're not dealing – my company doesn't deal with, you know, big companies that are can go to Madison Avenue marketing firms and develop these
right.
grandiose commercials and then come to me with the storyboard and say, here, shoot. So with the clients that we're working with are on much smaller budgets, so we delve more into soup to nuts. You know, we're going to help them create their message because they know they need video, and they're like, okay, Jim, I need a video, but what's it going to be about. I really don't know how to tell my story. And that's a critical part. You need to tell your story. So many videos I see online now, there's what we call glory reels, where people just have great shots of their business to some cool music. And, you know, that's engaging for about 30 seconds. You know, tell a story. Engage your client as to why they should do business with you. Have your clients on there talking about why they do business with you. Get people excited and engaged.
You know, I'm going to ask you to tell a story. Tell us a story of how you've worked with someone and maybe what the return on investment has been.
Well, one of my favorite ones is something that, like you said, would most people wouldn't find very exciting. I have an attorney. As a small business attorney, and he was doing a lot of SEO work and getting people to come to his website. And we did a short video where we did some testimonials from his clients talking about why they do business with him. And he found that when people came to the website and saw the video and they saw how these people liked him and they trusted him, and that they would call him up and they would just come in, and it wasn't an interview to figure out if he was right for them. They had already made up their mind on the video, so they were already closed. And he has found that his revenues have increased over 40% since he started the video about a year and a half ago. And you know, so this is a guy who says he's paid for his video hundreds of times. In fact, most of my clients, that's what I want them to do, is I want them to pay for the video hundreds of times, and because it is an investment in their business to make the money. And if I can make them, you know, make their business more successful, then I really do have the greatest job on the planet, because I get to have fun doing what I'm doing, and I get to help companies increase their revenues.
Now, can you share for our listeners maybe a tip of how to choose the right video firm? You know, like what's something to look out for? Because there's a lot of people, everybody with a camera calls themselves a videographer these days, and cameras are so inexpensive. At one point, cameras were super expensive, so you can kind of tell who the serious people were. So you have any tips for our listeners?
Yeah, and you're exactly right, because anybody can go down to Best Buy right now and get themselves an HD camera and call themselves a professional.
Right.
And, you know, I think there's two kind of people that are shooting video. There's the videographer, which, you know, anybody with a camera on their shoulder is a videographer. And then there are cinematographers. And I consider myself a cinematographer because I shoot as if for the cinema or television. We know how to light. Cinematographers know how to, compose the shot and tell a story. It's a big difference. And so if you want to hire somebody, I think you want somebody that's more than just a camera and a tripod, as we call it. The best way is just get online and see their work, because you know, if they're doing video and they're doing video for online and internet, they should have examples of their work online. Now, a lot of people have demo reels, so you want to make sure it's not just a cool collection of shots, all put to music, which is all fine and dandy, but do they know how to tell a story? Do they know how to convey your product and service in something that's respective of what you do? For example, you know, if you're selling a low-dollar product, like, let's say you're selling a Kia, not the knock Kia, you wouldn't sell a Kia the same way you would sell a Lamborghini. The image and the message would be entirely different. So if you're in a luxury business, you probably need something more luxurious. If you're in something more economical, like ShamWow, you know, you want to make them say wow every time. You don't need a big show. But check out their work. And the main thing is, just like with anything, check references. Call their clients and see what they have to say. Because you're right, Lena, this is a business full of amateurs. And also, creative people can be a little flaky. And
really?
So call their clients and say, hey, you know, I saw this video that these guys did for you. Would you use them again? What was your experience like? Because you'd be amazed at what people will say. So you want to hire somebody that can not only, you know, portray your company in a light that you want to be portrayed in. You want to make sure they take care of their clients. You want people who have raving fans. That's what I like to say about my clients. We have raving fans.
You definitely have raving fans. It seems like most of your work, too, comes from referrals.
Yeah, we don't do any advertising whatsoever. It all comes from, you know, I do a project for Bob, and Bob calls Joe, and Joe says, hey, I like that. And you know, just it comes on like that. We have what we call relationship marketing. We like to develop relationships with people because we are in the business of helping people grow their business, and that's a great business to be in.
Sure. And one other thing I think that you specialize in that I've seen from a lot of your work is making things look interesting that aren't. I mean, when I contacted you to do an insurance video, how exciting is insurance? But it was a training video. So, you know, again, not to pigeonhole you as someone that just uses video for their websites. You do a lot of different types of things, training videos, all kinds of things that really making a subject matter that could be very dull and boring, exciting and fun and sometimes funny and interesting and educational. And one other thing I did find very surprising, after looking at your work, I thought, gosh, this looks like it's going to be really expensive and out of our budget. But talk a little bit about that, because you gave me a lot of different ranges, like the Mac Daddy or the Streamline. I mean, you gave me a lot of different options, which made it very easy to work with you.
Well, the first question I usually get when someone calls me up is, Jim, how much does the video cost? And that's kind of a really open-ended question. It's like saying, how much does a car cost or how much does a house cost? You know, what kind of car? How big a house? And video is the same way. I mean, you think about Hollywood, a motion picture is about 2 hours long. One can cost a couple million. Others can cost $200 million. It's all what it takes to make that production come together. And that's based on what I call the rule of C's, which is if it's complex, it's costly. If you want something fancy and you're going to be shooting on lots of locations and using jibs and cranes and even helicopters, of course it's going to be much more than if you're doing something that's more budget-minded. The question is, you have to do a balancing act of how fancy do you want this to be. And there is some use to, pardon me, using the Hollywood tools. I mean, Hollywood uses cranes and jibs and dollies just like I do with my company, because the camera in motion instills emotion, and that's why Hollywood uses it, and that's why we use it. But if it's more complex, it's going to take more time to set up, it's going to take more rehearsals. So it's really a balancing act of how cinematic you want your piece. But my company and most other video companies, what they do is they build your production based on your budget. So if you come and you say, we want to do this overview of our company, and this is the range that we want to spend, then we'll build a budget around that. The problem is a lot of people don't want to come to the table and tell you how much money they want to spend.
Right.
But that's the equivalent of going to a realtor and them saying, okay, how much do you want to spend on a house? I'm not going to tell you. Just show me houses and tell me how much they are. You know, you have to be forthright with the people you're working with and say, and if you don't know what you want to spend, just ask. They can give you examples.
Which was me. I mean, I had no idea what something like that would cost. So you were very helpful in kind of giving me some ranges and some different options. So where do you see video in the future? I mean, it's not going away. Where do you see yourself 5 years from now?
Well, I think the video on the internet is going to just be just the mainstay. That you're going to go to a website and most websites are going to open with a video. In fact, that you need to do that right now, because Google has shown that if somebody comes to your website right now, any given website, the backout rate, the bounce rate is 9 out of 10. The 9 out of 10 people are going to shoot right out of your website. If you have a video playing, it's 4 times as many people stay. They're just going to stay and watch. And they're going to stay 833% longer, according to Google. I know, there we go with those Google statistics. But, you know, if you can get 4 times as many people to stay on your website and get them to stay almost 9 times longer, that means that many more people are getting your message. But I see video going even more towards cell phones, the smartphones now, especially with the younger generation, and these QR codes. If you don't know what QR codes, Google them and find out. You need to know what QR codes, and you need to be using them. Is that people can walk up to your storefront or see your product and snap this code on their cell phone, and they can get information about it. Well, how many of you like to read anything on your cell phone? Very few of us do, especially us people in our 40s. We have a little trouble with our vision reading on our cell phone. So, but if we could watch a video about that product or service, I mean, see yourself going into any retail location and there's a product on the shelf and you want to know more about it, snap it with your cell phone, and suddenly you can be watching testimonials and videos about that product. That's where I see video going. It's going to be so video-centric, everything we do. I mean, you walk by McDonald's and they're going to have a QR code about their special, and you're going to click on it and they're going to have some commercial on your cell phone. That's where I see video going.
Interesting. Definitely. Moving forward, you said people stay longer on the website if there's video. So perfect example, last night I'm researching colleges and universities with my teenager. So we're going to all these university homepages, if they didn't have video or something to keep her on that page, she was next. Yeah, and it was just amazing to me. I'm like, so you're going to rule out of college because they didn't have a fancy video? And she's just like, nah, couldn't see the campus. It wasn't moving. Next. I mean, it was unbelievable how quickly she went through these sites.
Well, this is the major decision of her young life, and she wants to, she's going to base it on her gut. And
gosh.
So you have to reach that emotion right there.
I wanted to shake her, but I do understand your point. Definitely understand your point. The need for video and for things moving, especially with certain generations and with everybody. Mm-hmm. So if folks are listening now and they're convinced, yeah, gosh, I really need to spice up my website, or I need video or testimonials or training material, how can they reach you?
Well, the quickest way is go to our website, theultimatehd.com, and then you can check out the work, theultimatehd.com, or you can call me directly, 770-938-7077. And one last bit of advice I'd give, you know, there's a lot of people doing video, is compare apples to apples. You know, you can always find somebody to do video for cheap. So, but, you know, if you want to get the videographer that filmed your daughter's wedding, nothing against wedding videographers, but, you know, if you want somebody to shoot a cheap video for you, you can get it done. And, you know, but a $500 video is not going to look like a $5,000 video. It's just like your $500 used car is not going to look like your $5,000. So keep in mind, you're going to get what you pay for in this business. Just make sure you get a good return on investment.
Excellent. Thanks for being our guest this morning. And give your website one more time, because I've got a feeling there's some fancy video there to watch.
It's theultimatehd.com. And before I close, I want to say hello to my wife. Hi, Reiko.
And the new baby.
And the new baby.
I got to say, though, it really, a huge testimonial for you and your business was going to your baby shower and seeing all of your clients. I mean, people love you. They love to do business with you, and they love to work with you for a reason. And that return on investment is huge, and you definitely have one now.
Well, my clients become my friends because we're in the relationship business.
That's great. Well, thanks for being our guest this morning. Great information.
Well, thank you so much.
And great video. I always tell Jim, you know, if you ever need someone to carry your bags on those trips to Africa.
That's it. You volunteer?
Yeah. Or those Arabian horses or those cooking shows, you know, I'm here. I'd be happy to do that.
You're very kind.
Yes. And actually, I met Jim because I helped him with a cooking video. I was talent. Can you imagine that? I probably shouldn't say that too loud.
And you can see Amy's video on the website. Just go to the product section, and you can find Amy on. If you've never seen her, only heard her voice, you can find her.
This is even better. If you've ever seen me, then you watch the video, you'll know he makes anyone look good. I mean, he even made me look good. It was a great experience. Thanks for being with us today. But Lee, no matter what, even if you have fancy video and if you have anything fancy, you still have to have a writer. You still have to have someone come up with the script, and you still have to get yourself to that position. Welcome to the Atlanta Business Radio Show. We have Angela Durden, writer for hire, here to talk about something very exciting. Welcome.
Hello, Amy. How are you and Lee?
Great. A return guest, but this time you have a new book.
Yes, I actually have two. They both deal with the subject of resume preparation, which a lot of people hear that and they start quaking in their boots because it's so complicated according to the professionals, the world at large. But actually, I've made a methodology to keep it simple and have named the book Keep It Simple, Stupid, or Kiss Your Resume and Say Hello to a Better Job. One is for men and one is for women. So one is men, kiss your resume, and the other is ladies, kiss your resume.
I like the title, definitely. And keeping it simple is probably very important. It seems like there's a lot out there right now about resumes and what's really required. And I mean, some people are putting photos on it. And I mean, they're really getting elaborate. But I think from the perspective of a business owner or someone hiring, what are they really looking for?
Really, all they want to know is three things. Number one, what do you know? How do you know it? And what were the results of your application of that knowledge to a business in a real world environment? Those are the three things they really want to know. And if you concentrate on those things, you cannot go wrong at all.
Okay. So basics, again, keeping
the basics,
it simple.
Yes.
You mentioned 9 elements to a resume. Can you maybe go over that a little bit?
Well, there are 9 elements. Well, actually, there's 9 stupid things or things that you should kiss in your resume. I'd like to point those out briefly. One is spelling and word usage. Another is fonts, layouts, length, content, career objective, references, salary history, and lies.
Lies are good or bad?
Bad.
And why would you put salary history on there? Do people really do that?
Some companies want to know how much you need, what you've been earning, because they may already have a slot budgeted in for how much they're willing to pay. If you're earning $180,000 a year and their budget is $50,000, you will not fit. And they already know this.
Sure.
It's a waste of their time. Still, I recommend, if you can get away with it, not putting it on there at all. Because you may be in a point in your life where $50,000 may be perfectly fine for you. You know, you don't need the $180,000 job with all the stress. You really, really want something less because, honestly, your life has changed.
Right.
So if you know that's the case, then don't put that on there. And hopefully they'll miss that for a second and they'll look at some of the other stuff and go, well, let me give them a call and see. Nothing's guaranteed, though, of course.
Spelling?
Honestly.
I mean, really.
People have typos? No.
Get out of town. Who'd have thunk it? Yeah. Definitely spelling has been a big issue. People forget how to spell their own name. You would think that when they're typing, they think, oh, I know how to spell my name. But, you know, your finger can miss a key. It happens all the time. Your fingers get misaligned. They do not go back and check it. So then these people go, wow, this resume looks really good. Let's do just a quick check and see if we can see anything about this person. They're going to go by the spelling on your resume. No, that person doesn't exist. Must have spelled their name wrong. Well, I can't guess. Poof, out it goes.
Oh, no doubt.
They spell their email address wrong.
Mm-hmm.
They put their wrong address in there. Forgot they moved.
Oh, wow.
Do you know some people have forgotten they got married?
Oh, that's
and
horrible.
They don't put their new name on there, and it's they put their wrong phone number over, forgot they changed their phone number. I mean, really?
Yeah. Is there a strategy for humans reading resumes or computers scanning resumes? Because not all resumes are read by humans, right?
That's true, but only really large corporations use that scanning method.
Right.
Small companies don't. It costs a lot of money to have an infrastructure like that. If you make it human readable, you should be A-okay. Keywords, all that stuff, you know, that's been so overdone to the point that people write a resume with keywords in mind and they miss the spirit of what that person really knows and how willing they are to apply that knowledge to a company. And a resume's an advertisement. It's your advertisement.
And you have to keep it to one page. I'm looking at the notes here. Keeping it to one page? Really?
What
if you're older? What if you're, I mean, that's pretty short.
It is, but the purpose of a resume is not to tell your life history.
Mm-hmm.
It's not to tell your entire work history. So you go back 10, 15 years with details. You can plug in all the career information that you want as far as skills that you've learned in all kinds of which ways under your qualifications section, that sort of thing, is skills summary. You can plug that in. If you really want to include anything past 15 years, because you've got a lot of it, what I recommend you do is put a summary section of the types of businesses you worked in and the types of skills needed and or a bullet point or two of somehow that you benefited these companies.
Interesting. Okay.
You cannot tell everything. If you remember, a resume gets looked at maximum 30 seconds before a decision is made to keep or throw away.
Wow.
And that's maximum.
Hmm.
And that's on a good day. No, that's on a good half minute.
Right.
Okay. So you have this resume. There it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's in this pile. And they've got a pile of them. And they do. The first ones that are going to go out are the ones that are sloppy. And they look crappy. Poof, they're not even going to read those things.
Right.
If they've got pictures of a man or a woman on their motorcycle or holding their cat, they're gone.
Lee, can you imagine putting
she's
a picture
about
of you?
Me.
No, she's not. But you know,
but it's true. People do this. They go, oh, well, I'm a cat lover. Everybody in the world's a cat lover. No, everybody's not.
Right. So now, less is more sometimes.
Less is more. Also, this is what else a lot of people don't think about. You may look like somebody's mama that they hate. You know, don't put it on there right away. You do not know who's reading these things and what their criteria is for choosing anything. You have no clue. They want you to think. HR people, they want you to think, you know, these companies, they want you to think, ooh, it's very scientific and very egalitarian, if you will. No, it's not. There's a lot of things that go into who makes the cut and who doesn't immediately, and it's all on paper. Mm-hmm. And I don't have to sit here and tell Jim. I mean, Jim understands the power of a visual.
Right.
A video is a different kind of visual than a piece of paper.
Right.
You must remember that.
The video, in this case, would be the actual job interview. That's the goal, is
absolutely
to have something written to actually get in front of them.
And that's all you want. No one, I take that back. When I say no one, it's quite a possibility someone somewhere in the world has been hired totally without an interview. Somebody saw the resume and went, woohoo, they're the one, mm-hmm. and hired them. That does not happen for 99.9999 the rest of us. So the purpose of the resume is simply to get an interview. During the interview, if you find out that somebody likes a motorcycle, hey, whip out that picture of you and your Harley or whatever. That's a bonding moment. But on that piece of paper, you must be very, very clear. This is what I do and why I am good at it. This is where I applied all of that. And this is why you need to hire me. You have to be very clear. And if you print it out, I recommend that people print out their resume before they send it out. Print it. Actually print it on mm-hmm. a piece of paper.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's going to be on a piece of paper somewhere, even if you email a PDF file or a Word document. Oh, and please print it to PDF, because word processing document programs do not always display the same fonts, do not hold formatting. You never know. And you will look like, you'll look terrible. Well, print it to PDF. Print it out yourself onto a piece of paper,
right.
Lay it there and wait a couple of days and go back and read it and look at it again.
Interesting.
You will be surprised what you'll find wrong.
You mentioned the font, too. It just needs to be basic. I mean, what do you suggest?
There's three fonts you can use. One is called Palatino. It's a beautiful, easy on the eye. The eye loves the Palatino font. But the eye also is very, very comfortable with Times New Roman mm-hmm. and Arial. If you keep it with those three fonts, Times New Roman, everybody has. Arial, everybody has. A lot of people have Palatino, but not always. So Times New Roman and Arial, oh my goodness. Keep it to those. If you need anything fancy, make it bold and a little bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Make it italic and bold. Make it
right.
italic only. Make it a little smaller, whatever. That's where you'll get the eye interest.
Right.
And you can focus the eye. But otherwise, if you start using wedding text because you liked it on your wedding announcement and you just thought it was so wonderful, nobody can read that on a resume.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that's going to be thrown out. Poof, gone.
Sure.
Yeah.
I could see that. Or when it's just too busy or too many fonts or mixing it up.
And absolutely.
So I noticed that your book has two different covers, one for male, one for female.
Yes.
Are there any other differences within the content?
Yes. The actual methodology for putting a resume together is the same for a male or a female. But through the years of me helping people put their resumes together, I noticed that men have a different thought process about it, and women have a different thought process about it, and their reasons for needing a resume vary widely.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, when I did these books, I thought, you know what? I'm going to make two different versions, and let's concentrate on the men's, hear how they think, what their motivation, what their motivation is for getting a job. And mm-hmm. it's usually, you know, keep wife and kitties happy,
right,
and fed and clothed. Whereas women, they a lot of times go for a job for a different reason. They've been on the mommy track for a while. Now it's time to go out back in the workplace, earn some money. They have no clue what they're going to do.
Interesting.
Their thought process in answering these questions is different. So, yes, the content is different. It's not just a different cover.
And where can people find the book?
Right now it's available on Kindle as an ebook at Amazon.com. Just type in the title, Kiss Your Resume, and both of them will actually pop up and you can choose which one you want. the hardbound books, the that you can hold in your hand and actually write in and carry around with you, are coming out in a couple of months.
Okay.
And those will be available at that time also.
Also on Amazon?
Also on Amazon, yes.
Do people print books anymore? I mean, honestly.
Yeah, they do.
It's amazing. But I still like to hold a book, but I read everything on my iPad now.
Yeah, a lot of people do, but truly, hardbound books, books that you hold in your hand and turn the page, aren't going away, because there's something about holding something in the hand and physically turning that page that helps you to connect to the information.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how the neurons fire. Maybe our scientist over here can help answer that question, but mm-hmm. I have no clue, but I know that is the case.
Mm-hmm.
I have a connection to a physical book that I do not. One is for convenience. One, I think, is the other for an emotional feeling.
No, I definitely agree with that. Do you still read books and that you can hold?
Yeah, these? I do both. Mostly, yeah. Though, electronic now.
Yeah, me too. Mm-hmm. But there is something to be said. And also, when you go to the beach, you can't take your iPad or Kindle the same way because it gets hot, it overheats, it gets sand. So, yeah, I definitely see a need for printed material. And then those that you want to highlight and keep.
Absolutely. Like the resume book, when the hardbound copies come out, you're going to be able to write in it.
Sure.
And answer your questions and that sort of thing.
Right. Excuse me. I could see value in that for sure. Any last words of advice for our listeners?
Yes, two things. One, objectives. Don't put an objective on your resume if it follows this pattern. I am a really eager person who wants to do a really good job for you and be rewarded for it. No kidding.
No kidding, huh?
That is such, everybody, that's what we all want.
Right.
Don't bore the resume reader with that. So if that's the best you can come up with, leave it off. Use that space to sell you better. Mm. The last thing is that kissing is good. Keep practicing.
I like that. I like that. Very clever. I love the name of the book, too.
Yeah.
Excellent information, Angela.
Thank you.
If people want to buy the book, give the information one more time.
They can go to Amazon.com and they can type in at the search at the field at the top, kiss your resume, K.I.S.S. because it is an acronym. And the two books will pop up. You can also email me at AngelaDurden.com if you forget all that, and I will be more than happy to let you know. Email me at AngelaDurden@MSN.com, actually.
And your website? What's your website?
AngelaDurden.com is the website. Yeah.
Okay. Great.
Yeah.
Because you've got all kinds of other business books, too, that folks may want
to check
out.
This is true. Definitely.
And children's books.
If you put my name in it at Amazon, several books will pop up. So, yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for being our guest
today.
Thank
you.
Great information. Something folks can always use, too. And that's one of those skills that, how often do you do a resume? Maybe once every 7 or 10 years? And
right.
It changes. I mean, what people are looking for changes.
Sure.
Even the paper. Everything changes. And the fact that they're electronic now is definitely changing. Our last guest this morning welcomes the Atlanta Business Radio Show, Jake, who's here to talk to us about the Change Challenge. Welcome.
Thank you, Amy.
So, Jake, what is the Change Challenge?
The Change Challenge is a series of workshops devoted to local nonprofits where we are going to be providing social media marketing, digital marketing, hands-on workshops serving these nonprofits that really need it. And this will take place in a series of monthly workshops over the course of the fall, starting this month, actually. And we've got all kinds of great people involved. We've got coaches. We've got team members who are going to be providing the counsel and the hands-on digital marketing and social media marketing for these causes. And, of course, the nonprofits themselves. And we're always seeking applicants. So it's going to be a great, great fun, great time. It all ends in a big conference at the beginning of next year where the winners, this is all going to be a grand competition, and the winners, that is the nonprofit that succeeded the most with their social media marketing and digital marketing results, will get awarded a prize, and there will be kind of a big event and some knowledge passed on to the Atlanta community and nonprofit communities at large, potentially even nationwide, regarding how best to use social media marketing, digital marketing to really help these causes out.
Interesting. So you're looking for lots of things here. To our listeners, you're looking for coaches, mm-hmm. Nonprofits, and then people yes. to be team members?
Absolutely. And sponsors as well. So, yeah, we have an application process on our Facebook page. You can look us up. Look up the Change Challenge on Facebook. Of course, we're on Twitter as well, and we have a website, which is thechangechallenge.org, without any spaces, hyphens, etc. But, yeah, so we're seeking coaches, and the coaches don't necessarily have to be social media experts, but if they have some really good experience with handling clients and helping walk them through the process of determining their best needs, and then they and the team members and, of course, those of us also involved, the principals, will really help provide them with what they need to succeed.
Now, do you need to be really well-versed in social media to be a team member?
Not necessarily. And in fact, part of the offering here is that all those involved volunteering their time and efforts will be getting some great social media hands-on education. I myself am a professor, or at least a part-time instructor, I should say, at Georgia State, teaching social media marketing and search engine optimization, and I provide those as digital marketing consultant services as well. So I have that to offer. My other immediate team members who are helping found this are also equally, if not more so, savvy in those provisions. So we're going to be providing some great knowledge. One of our founders for this is actually Sherry Heil, who's the founder of SoCon, Kennesaw State University's social media local conference. So we've got some great talent. We've got some great education to pass on to both the nonprofits and the people who are going to be devoting their time and effort and work to really help these nonprofits out.
And what made y'all focus on nonprofits? I mean, this is something that could really be applied to any type of business, but the Change Challenge, what made you focus on nonprofits?
And that's a great question. What's interesting is actually going, and I'm going to have to wear my instructor hat here, because if you go back to the roots of social media, it really, in the early days, so much of it was cause-centric, devoted to causes and nonprofits. Some of the first social media sites, one of the big ones that, you know, that was popular back in the day is called 6degrees.com. That was all about sharing, and there were a lot of sites that were similar, which were about donating money to your favorite cause and then sharing that cause, sharing that information with your friends. You know, you were emailing, sharing it, you know, via social media. So that and there were government projects that were major social media sites that were devoted to helping the environment, gathering people's input on their communities and the environmental hazards or benefits within their areas of living. Aggregating all of that information. It was all about sharing information, and that's what social media is, collaborating, you know, discussion, online sharing. So it gets back to the roots of what social media was in its invention.
But how do these nonprofits, have you gotten like just overwhelmed with people wanting to do this?
Well, that's part of why I'm here today, is we got to put the word out, get some more players on board. No, we've gotten some good responses. We've gotten some good folks wanting to be involved as far as nonprofits, as far as team members, et cetera. But we're always looking for more. We're really trying to get some great applicants and really do the best job we can for the nonprofits that could really use us
the
most.
Help. And yeah. Then what is the criteria that's going to get someone to win? Or is it just your committee decides?
It's whoever I like the most.
Is that it?
Yeah.
The one that
pretty much.
No, we'll have. We're going to bring in some to make it completely impartial. We're going to bring in some great judges from the community who won't be involved with the program in the other respects. Mm-hmm. You know, so some great, you know, local representatives of digital marketing and social media marketing agencies here mm-hmm. in Atlanta or even elsewhere, you know, bring in those VPs, CEOs of those agencies, and have them kind of judge. And, you know, the judgment will be based on You know, what were the results? What were the qualitative results? You know, so often in marketing, there is a tendency to look in terms of quantity. And certainly in digital marketing, you know, the history of the internet, you know, there was so much attention given to what's the quantity, what kind of numbers, what kind of reach, right. You know, sure. What are the eyeballs that are out there? And social media at its best is about connections and relationships, and all of that is quality. So, you know, you can have a very small segment, a very small community, but it can be dynamic and effective and very rich in participation.
Sure.
So in those kind of instances, that's where the best benefit is.
A couple of things I want to make sure we capture before we run out of time. How long is the project?
Well, we, as I said, we'll be starting with our first workshop later this month.
Okay.
And you can find all the dates on our Facebook page. Again, look for the change, search for the Change Challenge on Facebook. And it runs through November, and then we'll have, as I said, kind of the award ceremony and collaborative conference, the big, huge ending event, presentation event in January.
So these seminars are monthly?
Yes.
What if you can't attend 1 month? I mean, what if you have a conflict just 1 month? Does that eliminate you from the process?
Well, I've found for scenarios like that a certain style of execution is the most appropriate. And by execution, I mean some kind of government style, you know, foreign jail type. No, I'm kidding.
That's the way I took it.
Yeah, absolutely.
So. If you can't make it a priority, then you shouldn't apply, right?
Yeah, no. You know, they're certainly understandable that not everybody is going to be able to attend everything. You know, for certain roles, you know, of being involved, you know, for the nonprofits, of course, they're going to want some representative. They're going to want some representation there for every single one of the workshops. That's
right.
What they're signing up for. And also, you know, we want to be able to guarantee that the coaches for these teams are going to be there for every single one of the monthly events. And, of course, we want the team members there as well. But definitely the focus is for the coaches are going to be there. The nonprofit clients are going to be there. We want this hands-on training to be effective. So,
and is there a charge to participate?
Only for the nonprofits and for the sponsors as well, of course. We're always seeking sponsors, and we can certainly submit our sponsorship application form to anybody who's interested. Our email addresses can be found on the website and the Facebook page, or you can email me directly at jake@zenofbrand.com. To inquire more about sponsorship details. But for the nonprofits themselves that are applying, yes, there is a charge because they will be getting some great hands-on education, and not just hands-on education, but they're actually getting the marketing services. We will be setting them up and providing them with the actual digital and social media marketing outputs.
So we can jumpstart their social media marketing.
That sounds great deal, actually.
Yeah, and really, you know, the goal isn't so much to say, okay, well, this organization wants to jumpstart their social media marketing. Well, good, that's great, but that's just a starting point. Really, right. What it's all about is building community. Mm-hmm. And right now, more and more and more people are online, whether they're on YouTube watching videos, as our former guest was so eloquently speaking, or whether they're reading writing, as our other former guest was so eloquently speaking. Either way, they're online more and more and more. And so building that community gap, pulling those people together, you know, surrounding their interests in that nonprofit cause, that's what it's all about. And that's what this event is about.
Give the website one more time.
It is www.thechangechallenge.org. No spaces, no hyphens.
Excellent.
Yes.
Great information. Neat
yeah.
challenge.
Yeah,
very neat challenge.
Stuff.
We'll have to follow up with you in January and see who won. Maybe we'll have the winner come on and talk about it and how it's changed.
You're going
to
narrow down to five, right? That's the plan? Five
right,
nonprofits?
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks for bringing that up. We have five nonprofits that we'll be devoting this to. And so, yeah, that's who the competition will be between
the
two.
And the deadline is when for nonprofits to apply?
That, you know, honestly, I should have brought that information with me. I don't have that off the top of my head. I'm sure it's got to be
sooner
very
than
soon.
Later,
yeah, it
right?
has to be, absolutely, because the first workshop starts in a couple weeks. So,
excellent.
But there is still time.
Yes.
Good.
But I'd go to the website now.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Great information, Jake. Thanks for being our guest this morning.
Thank you so much.
And to all of our listeners, Thank you for listening to our show. Until next week, I'm Amy Otto with the Atlanta Business Radio Show. Stay cool.